stripped of all Lamarckian taints, this was the birth of neo-Darwinism. And it's important to stress this because this is the intellectual beginning of the current theory of evolution. Because now we're living in the era of the so-called neo-Darwinian synthesis. This is its root. This is pure Darwinism. It eradicates any issues of acquired characteristics, which, of course, were throughout Darwin's own publications, because Darwin started out with some Lamarckian influences, and by the 1880s was practically a Lamarckian himself. Weismann was pushing it back to Darwinism, and to differentiate it from what Darwin himself was saying, it's called neo-Darwinism. Weismann was a very creative scientist, and his most famous experiment, it was really a propaganda experiment, was he was saying, okay, think of Lamarckianism. This pangenesis, this genetic information comes from the entire body. That's what you argue? Okay. And that's how acquired characteristics are passed? All right. Let me just cut off the tails of mice. I'll cut off its tail before it reproduces. If we cut off its tail, obviously, of course, this was a half-joking experiment, but it was very effective. If this pangenesis is pulling the reproductive seed from the entire organism, the entire mouse, doesn't have any tail, well, then the next generation won't have any tails, will it? And he breeds these mice, and they, of course, have tails. And then he cuts off the next generation of tails, and they still have tails. The tail should at least be growing shorter, shouldn't it? But no, they should be turning into guinea pigs. But no, they keep their tails for generation after generation. This was more of a polemic experiment, and yet a famous experiment because it was much publicized, and it was, I mean, Weismann did many other experiments, but this was the one that captured the public attention that more than anything sort of was used to attack Lamarckianism. Now, Lamarckianism remained, especially among paleontologists, where it was always the strongest, but this was the evidence against it, and Weismann was a wonderful proponent of it. And if there's one experiment that captures the birth of neo-Darwinism, it was Weismann's experiment with those poor mice back in Germany. Now, Lamarckianism did survive this, as I said, especially among paleontologists, and particularly in the Soviet Union. But it gradually lost its influence in the West. The breakthrough, though, into neo-Darwinism didn't come from Weismann, even though he helped lay the foundation for it. The breakthrough occurred around 1900 in the work of Dutch botanist Hugo de Vries, who offered mutation theory as a plausible compromise explanation for the evolution of new species. Think of the situation he was in. Classical Darwinism seemed discredited because they had no mechanisms for preserving variations. Everything would be swamped. Lamarckianism was discredited by the work of August Weismann. So what's the alternative? And biologists all over Europe and America are scrappling to try to come up with some answer. You can read scientific papers from this period, and you'll just see them struggling with what possibly could be the cause of variation and inheritance and therefore evolution. How could this whole process work? We believe in evolution, but we really don't have a clue of what mechanism is plausible. Well, de Vries, in this situation, a great botanist, comes up with a possible solution, and that was mutation theory. When you think about it, it really has its problems, but if you put it back in its time, everything had its problems, and so people were looking for alternatives. Mutation theory accepted Weismann's proposition that only inborn traits are inherited. So it does have its pedigree coming out of Weismann's theory of germplasm, and many of the early mutation theorists did talk about germplasm as the possible carrying vehicle for these inherited changes. To overcome the concern that these inborn variations would be swamped, de Vries proposed a rather radical solution. He proposed that mutations could be so significant, they wouldn't be little variations, in other words. The variations would be so significant, mutations as it were, so discontinuous, such a big jump, not slightly different color, not slightly better eyes, not slightly better talent, but dramatically better talon, say, in a hawk, dramatically changed eyes, dramatic changes, and that was implausible enough, but you add to it then that they would be widespread enough, that they would happen throughout a population, or at least significant minority within a population, that they would almost abruptly form a breeding population of a new variety or species.